Welcome to Cannabis Connection World Podcast, where cannabis connectors meet and discuss the gospel truth of cannabis, the plant connecting the planet.
This episode in cannabis class, we will learn more about the science of the cannabis plant. What is the endocannabinoid system and how the chemicals THC and CBD react within our brain? I will speak with Dr. Felicia L. Dawson, who is a certified OBGYN that closed her practice to pursue advocacy and education regarding cannabis. And finally, I am bringing back the Cannabis Chronicles. You will hear from the Cannamedic, a veteran and EMT that uses cannabis to treat his many ailments. So sit back and relax as I serve you this cannabis content rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Cannabis class. The science of cannabis plant and how the endocannabinoid system works within our bodies.
This month, I want to focus on how cannabis is used medicinally. When somebody asked me what the difference is between his neighborhood weed man selling him weed and this medical marijuana, I realized that there is a lot we are not talking about. I explained to this individual that the biggest difference is that the flower or cannabis oil that is prescribed by a physician to a person suffering from Tourette's or from Crohn's disease is very different than the weed that you consume recreationally. We have already learned that cannabis was labeled as a Schedule I drug during the Nixon administration, meaning that it has no medicinal properties, grouping it with harmful drugs like heroin and cocaine. Now, almost 50 years later, research proves that cannabis has numerous medicinal uses and has been known to heal certain diseases. I thought we should have a better understanding of the science of the plant and how it interacts within our bodies. Let's start with where and when cannabis was even discovered. Research shows that the plant originated in India or Africa region of the earth and was first named in the mid-1700s. Before the United States began its campaign against cannabis, it was found in most pharmacies around the world for treatment of pain associated with migraines, arthritis, and labor. Hemp has even been found in ruins of ancient cities from Egypt to China. Even the United States Constitution was written on hemp paper. Mankind has been using cannabis for thousands of years, either medicinally or for industrial purposes. We now understand that cannabis has three different species that we can identify: indica, sativa, and ruderalis. Each of these species have different effects on the body when consumed. Cannabis is incredibly dynamic and complicated, having more than 500 chemicals in it. Over 100 of those chemicals are called cannabinoids. Two of the most potent cannabinoids that we know about so far are THC and CBD. THC is actually the cannabinoid that has a psychoactive effect. So it is the chemical in the plant that gives you the feeling of being high. But it is also the cannabinoid that stops convulsions and helps to manage pain safer than opioids. CBD is the cannabinoid that does not have a psychoactive effect and actually has properties that can stop the feeling of being high. It is known to have anti-anxiety effects on the body. This chemical in the plant is commonly used to treat depression and PTSD, and in some studies has been proven to stop tumor growth. Most research on the plant and how its cannabinoids work within our bodies has been done overseas. After the United States began the prohibition of cannabis over 80 years ago, the rest of the world followed suit, removing cannabis from pharmacies and stopping the vital research needed to determine what the plant can actually do. Since 1963, an Israeli organic chemist by the name of Raphael Meshulam has been conducting studies of the plant, and today is known as the father of cannabis science. His main claim to fame is isolating the THC and CBD to determine the medical benefits of them. Most of the modern uses of these components come from his research. In the 1990s, Dr. Meshulam discovered the endocannabinoid system, or ECS, which is located in our brains and throughout our central nervous system. Endocannabinoid system is the system in our brain that helps the cells talk to each other. THC and CBD act like the food for these cell receptors, giving them the fuel to communicate efficiently. The ECS processes our sense of appetite and our sense of pain. It also plays a role in our mood and in our short-term memory and in mediating the effects of cannabis. I hear way too many times that cannabis is a gateway drug. Well, I like to say it is a gateway to prison. In what way is anything a gateway drug? Because it is grouped with other lethal, highly addictive drugs like heroin, it is guilty by association. If we kept candy locked in the liquor cabinet, it would be a gateway tool to alcohol. It is time to tell the truth about what cannabis can actually do and give the people the right to use it for the healing of our bodies. That's enough for cannabis class today. I get all riled up. Next up, though, we will learn more about the endocannabinoid system during my interview with Dr. Felicia L. Dawson, an MD who left her medical practice to focus on advocacy and education when it comes to cannabis and how it affects our bodies. Up next, my interview with Dr. Felicia L. Dawson, a licensed OBGYN.
Dr. Felicia Dawson.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much, Dr. Dawson, for joining the Cannabis Connection World podcast. We really appreciate you taking some time out today to speak with us.
My pleasure.
Let's start with allowing the listeners to get to know who you are. Please tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Well, I'm originally from Joliet, Illinois. I've been in Atlanta since 1979. I am a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist. I also have a board certification in integrative medicine. I've been in private practice since 1990, so that was about 26 years. I closed my practice about a year ago, and I'm making a pivot to be an educator and advocate for medical cannabis.
Okay. Well, welcome to the team. Welcome to the family. I definitely consider you part of my newfound cannabis family. And so let me ask you this. You closed your practice about a year ago. Was that because of cannabis, or did you decide to start treating your patients with cannabis, and that's not exactly allowed? It's limited here in the state. Is that what drove you to close your practice, or you wanted to focus more on advocacy?
I've been reading about, hearing about cannabis for like the last 2-3 years. I've been studying on my own, and it's really an exciting field, I'm finding. And coupled with my interest in the field, with my fatigue with the business of medicine, it was kind of a combination thing. I absolutely love learning. I love teaching my patients how to be healthy. That was my favorite thing in the world. But the business of medicine has just been very, very challenging and stressful. And I just decided to turn in another direction that's less stressful.
Yeah. Well, we're so glad that you did. And so do you recommend cannabis as treatment for your patients, or did you?
Well, when I was practicing, I would recommend it occasionally for people who didn't have an appetite or who had a cancer diagnosis and who were going through cancer treatment, because sometimes the treatment for cancer can be as bad as the disease. But since I've closed my practice, I found myself recommending cannabis to a lot more people, like my friends and colleagues and people that I've come to meet since I closed my practice. So I've actually recommended cannabis a lot more in the last year than I have when I was practicing, as I find out more and more about it.
Right, and engage with those people who really, really need it. I wanted us to talk about today the endocannabinoid system, and it's the first time that I'm introducing that word and this system to my listeners. So what is the best way, do you think it is, to go about explaining this? Do we start with cannabinoids, or do we just start with the endocannabinoid system? What do you think is the best route?
I think to look at it as a system with its three components, because it's basically three components.
Okay, well then let's start. Let's start with what is the endocannabinoid system, also known as ECS. What is that?
Well, I will start with a summary statement by Dr. or Professor DiMarzo, who stated that it's a system that helps us to rest, eat, sleep, forget, and protect. And the endocannabinoid system governs our nervous system, our immune system, practically every cell and organ in your body. And it's probably even more important than our nervous system, because it actually helps control the nervous system. It's a system that helps our inner body stay stable and balanced despite what's going on outside our body. So no matter what's going on outside, the endocannabinoid system tries to keep everything stable on the inside. And that's probably the easiest way to describe it. It helps us do everything from thinking to moving, digestion, reproduction, helps us to fight off bacteria and viruses and cancer. It really governs every aspect of being a human being, and as well as an animal. I mean, humans and animals all have the endocannabinoid system.
And so you explain it might even be more important than the neural system. Can you explain how this system was not something I learned about in high school? I don't remember the endocannabinoid system being one of the systems that run our body. So how did that happen?
Well, scientists were looking at the cannabis plant specifically to try to see what molecules are in it, why does it have the effects that it does on people. And in studying the cannabis plant, they discovered the endocannabinoid system. And the system is comprised of receptors, which I like to compare to as locks. It has endocannabinoids, which I call the keys. And then you have the enzymes that break down the endocannabinoids after they're done doing their job, which I call the cleanup crew. So it's basically three components. And we didn't hear about it because it just got discovered in 1990 through 1997. So the endocannabinoid system and all of its components got worked out and discovered between that period. And a survey actually in 2014 of medical schools only showed that 13% of medical schools even mentioned the endocannabinoid system. So even the young doctors who are training now, very few of them even hear about it. So doctors like myself who've been out for a while, we didn't get it at all. So if you're having to learn about it on your own or through some formal cannabis seminar or something like that. So that's why it's a relatively recent discovery.
Wow. Okay. When just when scientists thought they'd figured it all out. So so it's a recent study. Can you explain to us how you said as scientists and researchers were studying the plant, they came across this system that is within all living things, animals and humans alike, that use the phytocannabinoids inside of the actual cannabis plant to feed the system. Is that correct?
Yes. Our bodies actually produce these molecules called cannabinoids that behave just like the cannabinoids in the plant. So there are three categories of cannabinoids, which are basically molecules that have biological activity. The phytocannabinoids are the ones that are in the cannabis plant, and phyto means plant. The endocannabinoids are the ones inside people and animals, and that's endo means inside. And so those are the ones that our body produces when we need them. And then you have the synthetic cannabinoids that pharmaceutical companies make, which are based on the cannabinoids in the cannabis plant and also our own enzymes and whatnot, because they're actually making drugs that can make more of our own endocannabinoids more available, or they are making drugs that interrupt the enzyme to make them more available or to block certain receptors. That's kind of how they're going at it. So three types of cannabinoids: phytocannabinoids, endocannabinoids, and synthetic cannabinoids.
Wow. So explain to us then, now that this is a newer system, in the grand scheme of things, cannabis has been outlawed starting in the United States in 1937 and then spread throughout the rest of the world. So was this research done overseas? Was it done locally? How did the researchers found this by researching the actual plant? And so now that it is kind of a young system in the grand scheme of things that they're teaching even in medical schools, how are we as patients or of these doctors supposed to have a conversation with them about whether or not our endocannabinoid system is even being is deficient or in some way being affected by whatever else is going on in our bodies. How do we have that conversation with our doctors?
It's going to be hard because, as I was saying, very few doctors know about the endocannabinoid system. In terms of your earlier question, the endocannabinoid system was worked out with the combination of scientists in America and Israel. Israel, specifically Dr. Raphael Mechoulam, has done a lot of research and was actually funded by the American government, which is odd, but he's received a lot of money since the 1960s to research cannabis, but the endocannabinoid system itself has been worked out by a combination of Dr. Mechoulam as well as some scientists in America. So you will have to find a physician who feels comfortable, you know, with cannabis. Because I know when I look at my own colleagues and I tell them what I'm doing, and half of them are like, oh, that's cool, you know, I want to know more about that. And then the other half of being like, why would you want to help this drug be legal? We already have enough problems with the opioid crisis and, you know, we've had the crack epidemic before. Why would you even want to be doing that? So it's like half of the physicians in my circle have to even be educated about how it even became illegal. And there's more things that cause someone to be an addict than just the drug. Because there's many people who use alcohol. There's many people who use cannabis and they're not addicts. Actually, the addiction rate for cannabis is a lot lower than nicotine and cocaine and alcohol, you know. So it's a lot more things to go in to becoming an addict. Usually, you know, I don't know all of them, but, you know, trauma and a lack of a support system and,
right,
you know, a lot of different things go into becoming an addict. So
yes,
our physicians need education as well. They have their own biases and just plain old ignorance about the whole subject.
Obviously, because this required research that did not come from my doctors when I found out about this information. And it's a relief to be able to talk to a physician like yourself with your background that has actually embraced this new information, this new research. And we thank you for what you are doing out there speaking out about this. And even though it might not be too popular amongst your colleagues, you're actually trusting in the facts to help you do what you do and to help others. And so we're so grateful for all that you do in this space. I just wanted to say, so if we're talking about the endocannabinoid system and we can't actually have a conversation with our doctors about it, what other ways are we to know if this system is being deficient? I mean, we know it's being deficient because if you're a good law-abiding citizen, you're not smoking cannabis, right? But if we know that now that there are several ways that we can consume cannabis that can, that won't necessarily make us high, right? And so are there ways for us to determine if our endocannabinoid system is deficient, and how do we go about feeding that? I think a lot of people have questions about that.
Yes, well, there's a professor, Ethan Russo, who's a scientist who's really big into botany, plants. He has a lot of knowledge about plants. He actually worked at GW Pharmaceuticals for a while, which is the biggest pharmaceutical company dealing with cannabis mm-hmm. right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually came up with the term clinical endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome in 2004. And a lot of the autoimmune disorders that people have, like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, irritable bowel syndrome, multiple sclerosis, migraines, he feels are syndromes or entities that are deficient in cannabinoids. And they've actually looked at people with migraines and done blood work and spinal taps to look at the cerebral spinal fluid that circulates around their brain. And in fact, they do have low levels of the endocannabinoids. And just supplementing with the cannabis can help bring your levels up and get those autoimmune diseases under control. So if anyone, I would say that if you have an autoimmune disease, you can pretty much assume you are deficient in cannabinoids.
I'm sorry, say that one more time. You went out.
If you have an autoimmune disease, one of those diseases that I mentioned, you are probably deficient in cannabinoids.
Wow. So then it sounds like the best hope for these people who are dealing with these diseases and conventional medicine is just prescribing you more pharmaceuticals that give you cause more side effects, and you're not really getting a solution or an answer to your ailments. How can people reach out to you and actually have a conversation with you and maybe some of your colleagues on how they can go about helping to heal or treat their diseases in this space?
Well, I can definitely give you my contact information, but I know that I just thought about it. I mean, even though in Georgia the only thing that's legal is the low THC CBD oil, there is a Georgia registry of physicians who have agreed to give recommendations to people with those certain conditions that are covered by Georgia. But I would think that those physicians who are agreeing to write these recommendations in Georgia would probably be the physicians that you would want to talk to.
Okay.
You know, establish a relationship with one of those doctors that are in that registry. And I think there's, I want to say almost 500 of them now in the state of Georgia, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
When I heard Representative Peek speak at an event earlier this week, and it was several hundred doctors in the state of Georgia that are on that registry now. So those would be, as I think about it, those would be the open-minded doctors that you could have a consultation with, even if you don't have necessarily one of the Georgia-approved conditions. They still should have some knowledge of it. Right now, I don't have a private practice because, like I said, my office is closed, and I'm more in the public space trying to educate people. But my website, I have left up. I'm going to change it at some point when I get further down the road. But my website is still up, and I tend to post information on my Facebook page associated with the website about cannabis as I see that it relates to health in general, but especially for women. And that website is WMN.com, which is kind of a short form for Women for Women. The name of my practice used to be called Women for Women. So again, that website is WMN.com. And my email address is FeliciaLDawson@gmail.com.
Okay. And that's the best way to reach you. Thank you so much, Dr. Dawson. I hope that our listeners could get a brief understanding of what it is the endocannabinoid system is and does within our bodies. And thank you for really taking the step to really seriously engage with people and start with an education platform and an advocacy platform, because we obviously need more physicians thinking like you do and understanding the power that this plant holds. So
and Nicole, right quick before I let you go, I just wanted to give a couple of tips to help your endocannabinoid system be strong.
Please do. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so the endocannabinoids that your body makes are basically made from fat molecules, so it's important to make sure you're getting the right kinds of fats. Specifically the omega-3 fatty acids like DHA, EPA, fish oil, so that your body has the building blocks to make the endocannabinoids. And you should take in at least 1,000 milligrams a day. And if you have one of those endocannabinoid deficiency syndromes or autoimmune disorders I mentioned, it's recommended that you take actually 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. And if you are vegan or vegetarian and you don't want to do fish oil, you can always get algae-derived omega-3 fatty acids, because the fish eat the algae, and that's how they get the high omega-3 levels in their flesh. So that's one. Number two, it's important to eat at least 5 servings of vegetables with spices on them, because some of the spices actually have compounds in them called terpenes, which are also in the cannabis plant. And when you use the spices on your vegetables, it can also cause something we call the entourage effect or synergy. So instead of 1 + 1 = 2, when you're eating your vegetables with some of these spices like rosemary, basil, curcumin, you know, they help your cannabinoids work even better. So you have like a 1 + 1 = 10 situation. So make sure you get your 5 servings of vegetables and spices in there. Sleep is very important. 7 to 8 hours a night for the average adult is important, because if you're getting less than that, that causes stress, and chronic stress makes your endocannabinoid system it makes it underperform.
Right.
Exercise at least 150 minutes a week. Studies show that when you exercise, the body actually increases its production of endocannabinoids. So that's important. Beginning your day with some type of stress management, meditation, because, again, chronic stress makes your endocannabinoid system not work as well. Limit your alcohol and caffeine. And acupuncture helps increase the levels of endocannabinoids in your skin. Massage. And also osteopathic manipulation. So pretty much any body work where someone has good intentions, love, healing thoughts, when they touch you, can increase your endocannabinoids. So that's just a few things that people can do.
Wow. Never knew that acupuncture increases the in cannabinoids in your system, in your skin. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay. Wow, thank you so much, Doctor. Is there anything else, any other information, tips, or anything that you'd like to share with us?
Well, that was the main thing. I'm all about the information.
It is. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And again, we thank you for all that you do.
You're welcome. My pleasure. I get so much joy out of teaching. It is my second love.
Yeah, me too. I do too. And just sharing my story, I think it helps. And I definitely recognize how it helps others. So thank you again. And we appreciate you joining the Cannabis Connection World podcast, Dr. Felicia Dawson. Thank you again. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Felicia L. Dawson for joining the Cannabis Connection World podcast. We are grateful to doctors like her that see the value in fighting for this plant and are appalled at the business of medicine these days. On this episode of the Cannabis Chronicles, we will hear from the Cannamedic, a veteran and an EMT who has spent most of his adult life addicted to pharmaceuticals and alcohol, which had adverse effects on him. He explains how his journey to find cannabis saved his life and how it is saving the lives of others in his care.
Hello, my name is Stanley Atkins II, and this is my Cannabis Chronicle. I began using cannabis in high school, and I began using cannabis consistently around the age of 15. I used cannabis throughout high school as a form of therapy and stress reliever due to suffering from depression and a troubled childhood. I was caught in possession of cannabis at high school. I was expelled from public schools and subsequently sentenced to alternative school. During my time at the alternative school for possession, I ended up being awarded the Student of the Year for academics and behavior. And that's when it hit me that it was pretty paramount that I'm not stupid. I just enjoy smoking cannabis. So I took a small break from cannabis when I finished up alternative school, and the following year returned back to high school. I consumed cannabis throughout my high school career and up until the moment where I'd signed up to go to the military. And I did consume cannabis up until the time where it was time for me to go to the military. So cannabis and I have had a strong relationship even back from when I was young. when I did sign up for the military, I did advise my recruiter that I was a cannabis consumer, and he told me it'll be okay. We'll make sure you pass a drug test and things of that nature. So I ended up failing a drug test during enlistment for the military. I was kicked out, and they allowed me to re-enlist later, and I ended up signing up for the United States Marine Corps. And I went through delayed entry program, did all the training, and on the day I was going to boot camp, they had the moment of truth, and they asked if anyone had anything they wanted to get off their chest or anything they had been doing, and I spoke and said that I had been consuming cannabis, but I was clean, and I wanted to go to basic training with a clean conscience. And that did not turn out so well. I was berated by the staff sergeant. I was kicked out of the Marine Corps and sent home. A short time thereafter, I ended up enlisting in the United States Navy. I did stop consuming for quite a while. I was doing well in the Navy, but the problem was that while enlisted, I developed a severe drinking problem. I found myself being inebriated before noon on many days, you know, so many nights I couldn't remember, and I realized that I was destroying my life, my body, and my career. And it was become, upon realizing that I had a severe drinking problem and was a raging, functioning alcoholic, that I turned myself in for rehabilitation treatment. I was a self-referral, but due to a long, extensive family history of drug and alcohol abuse, I realized that I had a problem. And I did 28 days in level 3 rehabilitation for alcoholism. And that is where I would say my prescription pill journey began, because all the clinical staff did was replace one vice with a new vice. And that's when I really got heavier onto the opioids, the anxiety medicines, the depression medicine, the sleep aids, all of which were poison. So I completed my rehab, and I was actually clean for sober for 72 days while enlisted. And I did have a relapse while going through some heavy emotional trauma while enlisted. And I began drinking again. And it was quickly after I began drinking that I realized that I was headed down that path again. And I knew that in order to save my own life, I needed a different way to medicate. And with that, I went back to cannabis. I began consuming cannabis, you know, when I got off in the military, sometimes on the weekends, and it was the best stress reliever for me. Well, just before my second deployment, I took my pre-deployment drug screening, and we packed up and we went back to war to go put some warheads on foreheads in my helicopter squadron. And it was during this deployment that I was called to my command master chief's office, and he made me aware that I had popped positive for THC on a drug screening prior to deployment. And that was the beginning of a long ordeal dealing with the legal offices and dealing with myself while being on deployment. So I was subsequently sentenced to captain's mast. I was reduced in rank. I was, like, as I said, I was demoted. They took half a month's pay times two, and I was sentenced to restrictive custody. I was set to be discharged, and prior to being discharged, I decided that I am a really hard-working young man, and I cannot let this control the rest of my life, this decision for the military to kick me out. And I requested a disciplinary review board with a JAG officer. And what we did was we had about an 8 to 10 hour review board, a formal board, and I sat there and explained to them why I did not need a dishonorable discharge, why this plant is therapeutic and helps me. With some great assistance from the United States Military Legal Department and JAG team, I was able to successfully get my discharge upgraded to a general discharge under honorable conditions. I was discharged from the military. I came home, and I will be honest, when I pulled out of base, the first thing I purchased was a High Times magazine for my long ride home to reflect on the last few years of my life. And I came home. I was able to get a job through the Department of Transportation. I ended up transferring over to the fire department. I took to the fire department as my new career, and I was very successful in it. I successfully became a decorated firefighter paramedic. During my time as a firefighter paramedic, I only used cannabis initially for the first 5-6 years, maybe once or twice a year when I just felt that the stress from my occupation had become too much. And in fact, I was just using alcohol heavily, just as alcohol and prescription narcotics, just as many public service and law enforcement and military personnel do. And I was able to continue my career. I suffer from extreme and chronic body pain. I have bilateral osteoarthritis. I've damaged or fractured at least 17 different bones and ligaments. I crushed my right hand in an ambulance door at the fire department. I had my right foot crushed by a piece of heavy equipment at the Department of Transportation. Some of the injuries. And so during my career as a firefighter, it is very strenuous on the body. And I would notice that my body pain was getting worse. My arthritis was getting worse, and as well as injuries. And there was so much stress as a paramedic that eventually it became overbearing. And there was one night where I had a really bad call at work that really, it was a really dark, deep call. And I won't go into details right now, but it significantly bothered me psychologically to the point where I needed to go home. And upon leaving my shift that day, that evening, I actually went and got some cannabis and medicated. And I found out that, wow, the stress of working in emergency services can be aided with the use of cannabis. So I continued my career as a firefighter paramedic. I began working in the hospital part-time at Emory University Hospital, and I was preparing to enroll in nursing school when I began to have flare-ups up in my right upper quadrant. And initially, I thought it was gallbladder pain or something associated with my liver, but the pain was intermittent and it would only come every few months. And what happened in 2014 was I had a flare-up episode of pain, in which it was the most excruciating pain that which I'd ever felt, and it caused me to pass out. And little did I know, this was the beginning of the pain that has never left. After seeking medical consultation with several different physicians and clinicians, there was no definitive cause of origin for my signs and symptoms, and I was in turn continuously medicated with opioid narcotics. And through being treated and scanned and tested, there was still no final etiology of my disease process. So upon being treated at the Winship Cancer Center here in Atlanta, Georgia, and watching my clinical condition continue to decline, I decided to take my life into my own hands. And I told my surgeon at the moment when she offered me low dosage radiation for a condition in which she did not even know what it was, I had to inform her that I was no longer going to be treated at the Winship Cancer Center. And I turned my life over to cannabis. Upon making the decision to turn my life over to natural medicine, I can say that it is the decision that saved my life. After being treated through so many healthcare facilities, my weight continued to just fall off. I didn't eat solid meals for over 2 years. I had a heart attack during that from the opioids and the stress. And it was a complete stranger who assisted me and introduced me to Rick Simpson oil. So during my illness, I took all of my knowledge from healthcare and emergency medicine, and I made the conscious decision to go ahead and apply everything that I knew to cannabis and expand my knowledge in cannabis, the plant, the therapeutic values, as well as the history behind it. I became a medical cannabis patient, and I joined the advocacy here in my state to push for reform and to push for the expansion and inclusion of patients such as myself in our medical cannabis program. I am an active member of Peachtree Normal. I have testified at the state capitol for the subjudiciary committee for several house bills and state bills that have been proposed. I am an advocate that pushes for reform and is also as well as expansion and inclusion of African Americans in this industry, because this plant is the plant that saved my life. Now, on the flip side of things, it has been very difficult. It is not easy. The easiest day is usually the day preceding it, because in choosing cannabis I also chose to leave the life of what people would say a quote-unquote normal person. Because as I openly admitted to my cannabis usage and the therapeutic values of it, I subsequently had to relinquish all of my friends or so-called associates from ex-military and especially the fire department. Because I would say that as I came out about this, about 97% of my so-called brothers at the fire department stopped associating with me 100%. And I understand that the view from the outside and their opinion is one thing, but to actually know what that patient is going through and why they consume that medicine is another thing. And it takes a person to level us outside of themselves. I do not let this deter me. In fact, I have used this as motivation to push my mission and my agenda forward. That's why I'm connecting with so many other organizations, because I realize that I have a passion and I have a mission. And my passion is to fulfill my mission in bringing medical cannabis education and quality health care to each and every household. As a patient, as a caregiver, two things that I do understand is that there are days where I need that same help. There are days where I am still sick, but the thing is now that I can be sick confidently, knowing that I am no longer addicted to prescription opioids. I have been addicted to everything from Xanax to Oxycontin to Oxycodone to Hydrocodone to Roxycontin to Tramadol to Dilaudid to morphine. And I can say now that I am prescription pill free. Cannabis allowed me to free myself from the grips and restraints of pharmacological agents. And I can say now that the best decision I ever made was to take my life into my own hands and to choose cannabis. I thank the Minorities for Medical Marijuana for this opportunity to share my story, and I look forward to connecting with them in the future. And again, my name is Stanley Atkins II, but the world now knows me as the Cannamedic. I thank you for this opportunity, and I look forward to connecting with you guys in the future. Stay medicated.
Thanks again to Stanley Atkins, also known as the Cannamedic. You can find him on Instagram at THECANNIMEDIC, the Cannamedic. If you have any questions about the show today, please email me at info@cannabisconnectionworld.com. Looking forward to connecting with you. Don't forget, Cannabis Connectors, you can follow all the adventures of the podcast on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast, or on Facebook at Mary Jane Connectors, or on Twitter at CannaConWorld. That's CannaConN World. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Cannabis Connection World. In the next episode, you will learn more about medical marijuana and hear about the medicinal uses of the plant's potent chemicals, THC and CBD. I will interview patients that have been using cannabis to treat their illness. And in the Cannabis Chronicles, you will hear from the mom of an epilepsy patient and how cannabis is helping to treat her daughter's diagnosis. New episode every Sunday at 4:20 on Podomatic. You don't want to miss it.